You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. I'm your host, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News. We got a game tonight, the last one before the All-Star break, against the Brooklyn Nets, which will be the fourth time they've played this season. So Pacers might be able to walk away with a sweep of an opponent for the first time if they can win this game against the Nets. And I have with me a Nets connoisseur, Nick Letourneau from Nets Daily and the Charity Stripe. And we will talk about the Charity Stripe a lot today. But he is with me to preview this game. Nick, man, how are you doing?
Can't complain, man. Can't complain. Just moved down to sunny Florida from Maine. So, I mean, geez, what isn't great right now?
Wow.
I know.
I've never been to Maine, but I've only heard good things about Maine.
Well, we won't talk about Maine then.
You didn't like it? Uh-oh. That's
sad. No, it wasn't the best. I'm not a fan of the cold anymore. If I never see another sheet of ice again, it'd be too soon.
I had to chip ice off my car this morning, so understood sentiment on that.
Definitely.
So the first time these two teams played was opening night for both teams, I believe. And, you know, Jeremy Lin played and got hurt, and it was 140 to 131. And both teams are in really different places since then. So that's not really a good place to start. I think a good place to start is the first game in December, which I believe was the 109-97 win. I don't have the date because I'm stupid. The 17th. So we can start there as like a baseline of how these two teams have matched up. But first, I want you to talk about the Charity Stripe a little bit.
Super excited to talk about the Charity Stripe. It's been a project I've been trying to put together now for a couple years. We just launched, like 3 weeks ago, we launched the Twitter account. 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago or whatever, we launched the Patreon. And it's pretty much putting basketball content behind a paywall. But instead of that going into my pockets to line my nice little fat cat pockets, it's going to go to charity. And we're going to do a bunch of different charitable causes. First one is going to be going around to different school districts and anonymously absolving lunch school debt. I don't know about you, I remember middle school and all the kids kind of getting scarlet lettered or kind of shamed for not having money in the account or negative balances or whatever. I think that's just a crazy system. I want to do something about it. And that's what the first project's going to be. So if y'all want to subscribe to the Patreon page, it's the Charity Stripe. You can follow us on Twitter. We're doing a lot of good, fun stuff on there.
Yeah, would highly recommend checking it out. The staff is awesome, and I'm going to try to get something going on there just to help it grow, because I think it's a really great idea and a great cause. And, you know, for this podcast, we will do no ads. We will do solely Charity Stripe plugs. We will do more than one. But it's just a great idea and a very clever name. So, you know, just be on the lookout for me tweeting about that tomorrow. And if you're feeling charitable and you like basketball, what a better place to spend. No better place to spend your money than there. But December 17th, we saw the Nets and Pacers play in Brooklyn. And it was a 109-97 Pacers win. And that game was that was the first game after the Jahlil Okafor-Nixdauskas trade. So they were kind of in a disarrayed state that time. And then they played again on the 23rd in Indiana, and they went to overtime, and I was freaking out the whole time that I thought the Pacers were going to blow it, but they won 123-119. So the Nets just haven't been able to pull off a win against the Pacers. Why do you think that is? Just a big talent difference, or just not lucky, or how's it been for you watching those games?
Well, in both of those games, D'Angelo Russell was also out, which is a huge
That's
deal.
True.
So not only were they kind of adjusting from a trade, they lost Trevor Booker, who was a huge glue guy, a great guy to have. The starting role off the bench, he did a little bit of everything really well. So losing him, and after that first game, things were a little bit in disarray. I think Spencer Dinwiddie only had like single-digit points or something like that. And then you see it follow up a few days later, kind of woke up, the team looked better, and you saw him really compete and go to overtime. So I think it was kind of a combination of not having the firepower with D'Angelo Russell out, and backing up with not really having a lot of continuity. You just lost a team leader, someone that's been there and really made a difference in Trevor Booker.
Yeah, you could kind of tell with Booker in that first game to me when they only dropped 97. I think they only had like 22, or excuse me, I'm completely off there, like 25 assists in that game, which isn't bad, but the Nets play such high tempo and pace that, you know, they get around 30 most games. And, you know, Dinwiddie couldn't hit anything. He only had 5 points, and you know, it was just weird to see you know, the new lineups kind of jittering together without Booker. And, you know, I watched Damari Carroll a lot because I want him on the Pacers, and he had a really rough game too. And it just all seemed kind of disjointed. And I don't know if it felt that way for you too, but it made it less fun to watch. And I think that the Pacers were missing someone in that game too, but I don't remember. But I remember it being a weird game.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting situation. The teams are, both teams, I think, are in two totally different places, even from the December games.
Oh, absolutely. And Alex Poitras played that first time they played. He barely plays anymore. It's been a weird season for him. But, you know, and then the second time they played later that week, and Dinwiddie was just freaking unbelievable. And I know Jeremy Lin just picked up his player option, but I want you to rank the three Nets point guards from best to worst right now.
See, that's tough because D'Angelo Russell, in my opinion, is more of a shooting guard, especially when you have someone like Dinwiddie on the floor. And when Jeremy Lin was there, it was going to be like, oh, we got such an odd dynamic offensive backcourt. You know, we're going to have Lin kind of pacing the offense, doing all the great things. I don't know if you paid attention last year, but when Lin came back from his injury, I mean, the Nets were like a totally different team. I mean, it was like a team that could have definitely competed for an 8 seed, in my opinion. And so you get to the beginning of the year, you're like, oh my gosh, we have all this. And now we have like a go-to scorer in D'Lo, who's all he's going to have to do is just get the ball and score. That's all he's has to do. And it kind of fell by the wayside early. So if I had to rank the point guards, I'd go Dinwiddie first, then I'd go D'Lo kind of by default. And Lin is definitely a distant third now. I know that's probably not going to be a popular take with some Nets fans, but there were a lot of people that were disappointed that he picked up his player option. Not necessarily surprised, but a lot of people wanted him to opt out, maybe take a team-friendly deal, or there are a lot of people that really kind of want to trade it next year. And I don't know where I sit in the trade Lin scenario. I think he's a great guy for the locker room. He's had a great effect on the young guys like Rondé Hollis, Jeff, they're very close. He's done wonders with Caris LeVert and his off court presence, and that's kind of carried over into how he facilitates everyone. Caris LeVert's like the key that unlocked Jared Allen earlier in this year, and Jared Allen's just been on a roll ever since. So I'd go D'Lo, Dinwiddie, then Lin a distant third.
I like that order. That's pretty close to what I would have said too. You know, I'll propose to you a trade that gets you off of Jeremy Lin next year.
Ooh, okay. Let's talk it to me.
Lin comes to the Pacers, and you throw back the Pacers' 20th pick from 2016, Caris LeVert, and we'll just give you Darren Collison, and we'll call it a day.
Oh, you're not taking LeVert away from me. I thought this was going to be a good trade.
It was a joke. I just like I like monitoring LeVert's career because of that draft night trade for Thaddeus Young, and I think that trade truly is working out for both teams, which makes it so great. But I really do like Caris LeVert. He's been a lot better than I thought he'd be.
Yeah, same. I know when he first came along, I think he first started playing mid-December during his rookie year last year. He was a little slow out of the gate. People kind of build him as a three-point shooter, but he's kind of more than that. His three-point shooting is a nice aspect of his game, but he's a shockingly great facilitator. He has a really good handle on the ball, and he's a great finisher around the rim. I think he's going to be turned into a good ISO scorer as well. He's someone that can just go get a bucket when you need him to.
Yeah, I like what I see from him too. He's a really smooth player, and there's just something about that makes me think, you know, he's cerebral and understands the game at a high level. So I have high hopes for him, and in 4 years I'll be disappointed about that trade, but I think at the time it made sense for both teams, and I still think it did. So a rare win-win trade, but everyone loves to declare winners, so we have to decide eventually. But yeah, a rare win-win trade. I want to talk about something else that just happened to the Nets that makes them different too. In a string of savvy moves, Sean Marks turned Tyler Zeller into a second-round pick and Dante Cunningham in 3 days, which is unbelievably awesome work. And Cunningham played, I think it was his first game. Was it against the Pelicans?
It was. I think it was the first time or second time in Nets history that a player has debuted against the team that traded for him.
Who's the other one?
I don't know. It was like something from Nets PR that I saw. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Well, I thought it was hilarious that Dante Cunningham was a plus 21 against his former team.
Well, I mean, you're going up against the guys you went up in practice every day, so you're going to know how to defend them, and you're kind of feeling a little extra like, oh boy, I just got traded from this team. I really want to show out. He seems like a good glue guy. Seems like someone that's going to defend well. I admittedly haven't watched too much of his Pelicans game film yet. I haven't gotten around to it, But I think he's going to be, especially when consider that Zeller was only taking up Jared Allen's minutes. The team's not going to go anywhere, so get him on a playoff team because he's a good guy. And it works out. And then you get the return of a second round pick too. So you kind of free up space for Jared Allen to really keep growing. And he's really growing in that starting role. And you get another pick.
I'm excited for Jared Allen. The Pacers have a center from Texas too. So I hope he works out for you guys.
Yeah, I remember on draft night, I was at the draft when they drafted him. Miles Turner was on the floor doing kind of like floor stuff, interviewing and whatnot, which by the way, awesome guy. Love Miles Turner. But he was super thrilled when Jared Allen got picked and made a big deal about saying, you know, Jared Allen, you're going to be so great in the league. We got a Texas big man in the league. This is going to be great. And so far, Miles Turner was right.
I like Jared Allen too. But I think, actually, one more plug, Tyler Zeller, Indiana native Tyler Zeller. So we have to root for the Bucks. But let's focus a little on how the Pacers and Nets match up because this is a Pacers podcast after all. What big adjustments would you like the Nets to make from these first two games? You know, they've given up 107 was the least they've, or 109, excuse me, was the least they've given up to Indiana so far. And I know, you know, Carroll's been all right on Bogdanovich, but it seems like everywhere else the Pacers haven't had too much trouble scoring. You think there's any adjustments they can make on the defensive end to stop them?
I think that the defensive end, the Nets recently have really been running people off the three-point line. I think, let me check my notes here. Behind the Houston Rockets, I think that they run the people off the three-point line the most. They allow the fourth lowest three-pointers per game at 9.2. So don't let Indiana shoot threes. And I know I'm not sure outside of like Bogdanovich and Oladipo is really coming into his own as a three-point shooter, but he's got to cut off some of those long twos. So just really kind of run him off the three-point line, keep pulling down, trying to pull down as many rebounds as possible, and just contain Victor Oladipo as much as possible. The Nets really struggle with athletic, quick guys, and there's not a lot of players more athletic or quick than Victor Oladipo.
Yeah, he's been super fast this year, and you know, like you said, they're good at defending the three. The Pacers just happen to make them against the Nets. You know, 44% on the 17th, and 44% again on the 23rd. So they didn't take a ton of them, but they made them. And that kind of led him to win. And that, yeah, Oladipo was the killer in that second game. 38 points in overtime. He was a plus 7. He was huge. Thaddeus Young, I didn't know, was a plus 16. So I'm counting that that's his revenge game officially now.
I'll take it.
Yeah. So I think I would agree with you that those are the two keys. You know, if they shoot under 40% in that overtime game from three, they just lose. And in that first game, you know, I think it was closer than 12 most of the game. I think they kind of closed it out at the end, if I recall correctly. So,
yeah.
You know, yeah. So I think if they shoot a little worse from three, like the Nets seem to make teams do, then those games end up being really close. And, you know, it's something to look out for in this one, especially on the road and with the All-Star break. You know, it's just going to be a weird dynamic that I think that could play into the Nets' favor.
I think that one thing that sinks the Nets more than defense is almost 40% of their field goal attempts are three-pointers. But they are 0.4% away from being the last in the league in three-pointers made, like three-point percentage. So they take a ton of threes, and they don't make a lot of them right now, which is really unfortunate. So I think them trying not to shoot themselves out of the game, maybe taking smarter shots, that's kind of going to be the more key than maybe defense, because we got Jared Allen on the inside, and he's all right. And he's got to put some weight on. And Alan Crabb isn't the worst defender on the perimeter. And Spencer Dinwiddie's got long arms, and he's fine. But I think shooting themselves out of the game is going to be a big key, or something the Nets will need to avoid, and something Indiana will need to try to make them do.
I get why they shoot so many threes, because when I look up and down the roster, there's tons of good three-point shooters. You know, Carroll's really solid, Crabbe's solid, Dinwiddie's been solid this year. Joe Harris is probably the most underrated shooter in the entire NBA. Quincy Acey's a good shooting center. LeVert, we already talked about, you know, all these guys can shoot, but the creation is kind of what's missing. So I feel like a lot of them are like not the best actual shot. I mean, I don't watch them as much as you, so I'm kind of speculating. But you know, maybe they're open, but they're not like the perfect one, or they're not a perfect catch and shoot or something like that. And that could be a big factor for that.
Well, what's really unfortunate is a guy like Alan Crabbe, who really he's struggled at the beginning of the year, but he's had two back-to-back 30-point games. So watch out for that. We're recording on Monday. They play tonight. So he might blow that before Wednesday. But so far, past two games, 30-plus points. He's someone that's kind of almost useless when he takes more than one dribble. I forget the numbers, but off of one dribble, he's like, you know, over 40%. And then when two or more, it drops down to like 35 or something like that. And just keeps getting more and more abysmal the more he tries to put it on the deck and create for himself.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, Portland was the perfect place for him. It's a shame that he got paid and it made him get traded. Like, that sucks for him because Portland was such a good place for him with those two other creators. But I'm glad
you know who forced their hand.
The Nets. Yeah, it's awesome. And that trade made so much sense for the Nets too, because they like Crabbe and Nicholson is just a terrible NBA player.
I can't believe it. I mean, if Alan Crabbe never played another NBA game, that's still a great move because they turned Andrew Nicholson into Alan Crabbe.
Yeah. And Andrew Nicholson is bad. Like, Andrew Nicholson signs a $4 million for $26 million deal and he's out of the league the next year. What a bundle by the Wizards.
Ugh. I hear they're going to miss out on Derrick Rose, so at least they're moving in the right direction.
Oh, they're in the Ty Lawson sweepstakes, apparently.
I'd rather have Ty than Derrick Rose.
We'll have to do a Ty Lawson thread on the charity stripe.
Definitely. Coming up shortly.
Coming up very shortly. What about on offense for the Nets? You know, only 97 in that first one at home, too. And I know that was an adjustment game. But, you know, with a guy like Cunningham on the wing now, and I know they have D'Lo back, who they didn't have for both of those two games in the middle, you know, how has their offense really transformed since those two games? You know, how are they going to find a way to score besides that three-point barrage that they have?
Well, they're going to need to get Jared Allen involved. He's someone that has just been on fire lately. He's been rolling off double-doubles left and right. He keeps setting new career highs and everything. You know, one game he sets a new career high in points and he scores 22. The next game he sets a career high in assists with 6. Then he follows it up with, you know, 14 rebounds and 5 of them are offensive. So I think if the three-pointers aren't going to go down, you got to feed guys like Jared Allen in the pick and roll. You got to get him involved somehow. You got to let D'Angelo Russell kind of attack and do his thing. There's kind of been a real push-pull with minutes and getting him back. He's been a little rusty. Then he's played well, but he plays 30 minutes and hasn't played 30 minutes all season, so you got to get him on the bench. The Nets had an overtime loss just the other night, and D'Angelo, it was a double overtime loss. And D'Angelo Russell, I think he might not have even played in overtime. And afterwards, people thought it was like, oh, was it because of the 5 turnovers? And Kenny Atkinson said, no, it was minutes restriction. But you kind of get the feeling that they're a little trepidatious to play both Dinwiddie and D'Lo together, which I don't understand. I'd let it rip.
I would too. And it seems like those two guys are the future of the Nets, right? So if they can play together, even better.
Mm-hmm. Without a doubt. And I think next year that is going to be the starting backcourt. No matter what happens, it's going to be Dinwiddie at the 1 and D'Lo at the 2. And Jeremy Lin, 6-man.
I thought you were about to say Jeremy Lin at the 3. I was like, I don't know about that.
No, definitely not. Hopefully we can get some Caris LeVert in there. But he's injured, and both him and Rondae right now, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, they've been ruled out of Monday's game. So maybe we'll get them back before the All-Star break, but it's not looking likely.
I like to think this close to the All-Star break, if you're out for one game, you're just out till the break just because it's so close. There's no point.
Yeah, I mean, who wants to get hurt the Wednesday before All-Star break?
Yeah. I'm rooting for Rondae to come back, though, because my fantasy team could really use Rondae Hollis-Jefferson back on the court.
You know, fun fact, and I almost fell off my chair while I was preparing notes for this. Brooklyn is the 4th highest rebounding team in the league, which is, if you watch 2 games, you'd be like, how is this team the 4th highest rebounding team?
Well, it's mostly my segue, because I also found that out before the game, or this doing this, and I was going to say my matchup to watch in this game is the centers, because if the Nets are truly as good as rebounding as that stat would indicate, you know, the Pacers kind of struggle on the glass, and they, you know, the second chance points could be a kryptonite that kills Indiana in this one.
Well, I think the stats, it's inflated because of how many Brooklyn really forces you to take bad shots, and they pull down a ton of stuff, but then they go down and chuck up a 3 and nothing happens. So it's kind of an empty stat. But Jared Allen's really coming into his own as a rebounder, but he's so skinny, at such a slight frame. I mean, someone like Miles Turner is going to be able to knock him off out of position pretty easily. And he does struggle against size, at least pulling down rebounds. I know 2 or 3 games ago, he's matched up against Joel Embiid, and he had a nice game offensively, you know, good for a rookie. But you flip, you turn on the defensive footage, I mean, he's just getting bodied by Embiid. And Turner's a big body too. So I think Turner's going to have some success offensively, but Jared will definitely get his looks on offense too.
Yeah, I just pulled up Jared Allen's game log, and I'm salivating at this rookie now.
I know, it's awesome.
Since since the 23rd, he scored in double figures every game except their one against the Pelicans, and double digit rebounds three times, plus in all those games but two of them, and in those two games, I just got slaughtered anyway. I mean, he looks awesome on paper at least.
That's since entering the starting lineup.
Okay. Oh yeah, it is. That is exactly since entering the starting lineup.
But it's really only like an extra uptick of maybe 5 to 8 minutes per game. So he's been doing this for a while and he's been getting consistent, and he's had a lot of great guys feeding him. Dinwiddie is so good at feeding him exactly how he needs to be fed. Caris LeVert, before he went down with injury, I mean, it was like it was an alley-oop show every game. I mean, they were good for two or three jaw-dropping alley-oops every single game. It was nuts. So as soon as Caris returns, I think we're going to see another evolution or another push in Jared Allen's game.
I agree. And I'm sad we'll never get to see this team at full strength because of the Lin injury, and the Pacers just won't play him again after this one. But here's a weird random tidbit. Since starting, he's played seven games, and he's either taken 6 or 11 shots in all 7 of those games.
Really? Wow. I know. He's someone that only takes
funny
shots. Yeah, he takes the shots that he knows he's going to hit. He occasionally I think he's taken about 1 3 per game, and he's someone that he's really developing a 3-point shot. I mean, if Kenny Atkinson can turn Brook Lopez into like a 36% 3-point shooter or whatever it was, this kid's going to do well too. Timofey Mozgov was looking like a 3-point shooter at the beginning of the season. So I have faith that Jared Allen's going to develop the shot.
The Brook Lopez transformation was crazy because I was talking about Al Jefferson last year and how, you know, if he's not going to develop a shot, he just has no place in the league. And the guy I compared him to was Lopez, because Lopez had like 23 point attempts 2 years ago and then like 300 some last year. And Jefferson went from like 5 to 10, and he never modernized. So, you know, if Jared Allen can get it, he'll be a stud.
I think someone like Al Jefferson just needs the right guy. Kenny Atkinson's really been the like 3-point whisperer. He was, I don't know if you knew this, he was kind of one of the engineers behind Linsanity. He was on the Knicks coaching staff.
Oh, cool.
And went to Atlanta, and he really helped Al Horford develop his 3-point shot. He helped unlock Damari Carroll's potential and got him that huge contract. Jeff Teague was looking like a great player, and he's now a semi-reliable 3-point shooter. So there's a lot of guys around the league that have benefited from Kenny Atkinson really teaching them how to shoot, and teaching them what are good shots and how to extend their shot. And these are all guys that have like a good basic building blocks of a jumper too. So I think if Jefferson can get around the right people, he could develop a shot too.
Yeah, he's been good here. He just isn't modern anymore. And I've talked to him about that before. He just laughs. He's like, yeah, it's kind of fun because these young guys literally don't know how to defend post-ups anymore. And it's fun.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, people get someone like Embiid or other low post star. I mean, Brook Lopez too. You get them down in low blocks, and they have no idea what to do.
Well, Jefferson put the nastiest spin move on Embiid earlier in the season. It was awesome.
Nice.
So last thing, well, two more things. One is go check out the Charity Stripe. And then my last thing for you is what matchup are you most afraid of and most excited for the Nets in this one?
I'm the most afraid of Victor Oladipo just going off. I know I did, speaking of Charity Stripe the other day, I did a great thread after his flu game, and wow, I mean, such a great player. He puts everything out on defense. I mean, he's someone that's really going to disrupt passing lanes. Anyone that's not Spencer Dinwiddie that's holding the ball, he's just going to mug them. I mean, it's going to be rough. I mean, he followed up the 5-steal game with a 6-steal game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Nets are dead last in steal. I mean, they get 6 steals per game. So, I mean, that's almost 3 games worth of total in 2 games for him by himself. So that's going to be something to watch. But on the flip side, Brooklyn doesn't turn the ball over so much. Spencer Dinwiddie has the second best assist to turnover ratio in the NBA. And that's kind of carried over to the Nets. They only turn it over about 15 times per game, which if you watched 2 games last season, that they did that in a quarter. So they're moving in the right direction. So that's good. But they really struggle against athletic guys. Oladipo, someone that's really developing a three-point shot. He takes a lot of long twos, which for a three-point shooter, that's not something you'd want. But for a team like Brooklyn that runs you off the three-point line, that probably means that just inside the three-point line is going to be open. So for someone that's a mid-range shooter and really operates well between that space, between the three-point line and paint, he's going to have a lot of success, I think. And the matchup I'm most looking forward to is Jared Allen and Miles Turner, because love my Texas centers. They both have awesome hair. And I think they're going to go at each other. I think that the Texas thing, it's going to be like a nice little rivalry almost.
Yeah, and they have opposite play styles, kind of. Like Jared Allen's a way more banging inside kind of guy, and Turner kind of is on defense, but he's a better shot blocker than post defender, and then on offense, he really stretches it out. So it's like fire and ice battling it out. That was what I was going to pick for my most excited to watch, too. Good choice.
I think that Jared Allen, too, he's someone that moves really well on defense, and that's where he gets all of his blocks and steals, and that's where he adds his value. He's not someone that's going to, you know, keep you out of the paint. He's not that strong yet, but man, he can defend from the perimeter to the lane with no problem whatsoever.
Yeah, that'll be my favorite thing to watch too. I think they'll probably dap it up before the game with that Texas center nonsense now that they both start. So that'll be awesome. And Texas Corey Joseph also start. A lot of Longhorns starting in this game with no Collison.
Love it. We got all the Texas boys. I think Quincy Acey's from Texas.
Yeah, too. Shoot, I forgot about Quincy Acey. Wow, this is the most Texas game I think that they'll be all season.
The Texas Bowl,
yes. And it'll be a nice way to bleed into the All-Star game. Hopefully no one gets hurt in this one. Let's hear it. The official Charity Stripe Nets Daily sponsored score prediction from you.
Oh, that's tough. I know Nets average like 105 a game. I forget what Indiana averages, but probably right around there. I think that this is going to be another close game. Allen Crabbe is really feeling it for the first time against the Pacers in a while. He's really feeling his shot. Jared Allen's healthy. Spencer Dinwiddie he's just a really good NBA point guard. So I think that it's going to be a tight game, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Nets lose. They've lost 9 of their last 10, lost 5 straight. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it's going to be I agree with you that I think it'll be a very close and interesting one. Just the way these two teams play so fast, it seems like it's going to be high scoring, especially with D'Lo back. And in Brooklyn, I think the Nets have a fighting chance, but I don't know. I really don't know. This one is actually one of the harder ones for me to predict all season, just because I kind of feel like the Pacers have checked out and are just in all-star game mode. And they just had some nice like cupcake opponents recently, and they also had a game rained out, so they had a huge rest advantage against Boston. And like, it just keeps working out for them. So I don't know how much fire will be in their eyes in this one, but you know, I think they can pull it off. They've already shown that they can win in Brooklyn, but you know, two fast paced teams, high variance, either team could really just blow the doors off the other one in this game.
I think the X factor, the low key X factor could be Bogdanovich. I mean, he's someone that really likes to try and torch the Nets whenever he goes up against them. I don't think he was too happy with I think he was happy to get off of a losing team like that, but you know, getting traded sucks. And he's definitely a player that could do damage. Nets killers are always guys that shoot well from three.
I hate that he played for the Nets because he has so many games for the Nets where he was like the number one option and took a million shots, and it makes all his stats like inflated.
Mm-hmm. Gotta love it.
I want to hear your live reaction to this, but Emeka Okafor is starting for the Pelicans tonight.
What? Is he retiring tonight or something?
I just saw is his jersey
going up in the rafters? What's going on? What?
I know. I can't believe it either. Emeka Okafor starting in 2018. This is something else. That is crazy.
I mean, like six weeks ago, he was in a SpongeBob uniform 6 weeks ago in the G League.
Oh, man. That's awesome. I have to watch Pelicans Pistons. I had no plans to watch Pelicans Pistons.
Oh, my gosh. I got to catch that one for sure.
All right. Anything you want to promote before you get out of here? Obviously, Charity Stripe.
Yeah, just one more time, Charity Stripe. You can find us on Twitter @_CharityStripe. Super easy to find. We're going to start trying to cover games live. I'm going to try and hit up different people from around NBA Twitter to see if they want to live tweet games. But usually every day but Sunday, we do a couple threads of big performances around the league, highlight different performances. We got some great, great, talented writers. Jackson Frank has been killing it for us. He's written a few articles. We got Tony East on the staff too. The Tony East.
We got to plug Nate Wolf and his beautiful Porzingis piece too.
Oh, that was so great. And he followed up with, he must have stayed up all night to write that free agency thing. Yeah. I was sitting in the group DM like, what just happened? I was gone 20 minutes. What just happened? And then 40 minutes later, he produces that. So he's very talented too. I know he's with NBA Math as well. So got to give the team a follow. And anyone that wants to join us, feel free, hit me up on Twitter. Always looking to add new people.
Yeah, highly recommended. Content for a cause. Great idea. Awesome, awesome idea. So thank you, Nick, for coming on and thinking of such a great idea for content.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
As always, guys, we'll be back to recap this game tomorrow. It's going to be an odd week and weekend of content with the All-Star break, but we'll cover all of it since the Pacers are going to be so heavily on the front and center of All-Star weekend. They have someone in almost every event. Thanks for listening. Have a great Wednesday, and we'll see you tomorrow.